"I have waited through the eons for you to come to me," said Eos. And although he knew that she embodied the great lie, Taita could not help but believe her. She turned and walked back into the mouth of the grotto. Taita did not try to resist. He knew that he could do nothing but follow her. Despite all the defences he had raised against her enchantments, there was nothing he wanted to do more at that moment than follow wherever she might lead. Beyond the entrance, the tunnel narrowed until the lichen-covered rock brushed his shoulders. The spring water was icy as it burbled over his feet and splashed the hem of his tunic. Eos glided ahead. Under the black silk, her hips moved with the undulating motion of a swaying cobra. She left the stream and went up a narrow stone ramp. At the top, the tunnel widened and became a roomy passageway. The walls were covered with lapis lazuli tiles carved in bas-relief, depicting human forms and beasts both real and fabulous. The floor was inlaid with tiger's eye, and the roof with rose quartz. Large rock crystals the size of a man's head were set on brackets on the wall. As Eos approached each in turn, they emitted a mysterious orange glow that illuminated the passage ahead. As they moved on, the crystals faded into darkness. Once or twice Taita glimpsed the shaggy black shapes of apes as they moved away into the shadows and disappeared. Silently, Eos's small bare feet flitted over the golden tiles. They fascinated him, and he found it difficult to take his eyes off them. As she moved on, she left a delicate perfume on the air. He savoured it with intense pleasure and recognised it as the scent of sun lilies. At last they reached a commodious chamber of elegant proportions. Here the walls were of green malachite. Shafts in the high ceiling must have reached up to the earth's surface, for the sunlight spilled down through them and was reflected from the walls in a glowing emerald effusion. The furniture of the room was of carved ivory, and the central pieces were two low couches. Eos went to one and seated herself, folding her legs under her and spreading her cloak so that even her feet were concealed. She gestured to the couch facing her. "Please, be at your ease. You are my honoured and beloved guest, Taita," she said in the tenmas. He went to the couch and sat opposite her. It was covered with an embroidered silk mattress. "I am Eos," she said. "Why did you call me beloved? This is our first meeting. You do not know me at all." "Ah, Taita, I know you as well as you know yourself, perhaps even better." Her laughter was sweeter on his ears than any music he had ever listened to. He tried to close his mind to it. "Even though your words defy reason, somehow I cannot doubt them. I accept that you know me, but I know nothing of you except your name," he replied. "Taita, we must be honest with each other. I will speak only the truth to you. You must do the same for me. Your last statement was a lie. You know much about me, and you have formed opinions that are, alas, mostly erroneous. It is my purpose to enlighten you and to correct your misconceptions."
"Tell me where I have erred."
"You believe I am your enemy."
Taita remained silent.
"I am your friend," Eos went on, "the dearest and sweetest friend you will ever have."
Taita inclined his head gravely, but again made no reply. He found he wanted desperately to believe her. It took all his determination to keep his shield high. After a beat, Eos continued.
"You imagine that I will lie to you, that I have already lied to you, as you have lied to me," she said.
He was relieved that he threw no aura for her to read. His emotions were seething.
"I have spoken only the truth to you. The images I showed you in the grotto were the truth. There was no element of deceit in them," she told him.
"They were forceful images," he said, his tone neutral and noncommittal.
"They were all true. All I have promised is in my power to give to you."
"Why of all mankind have you chosen me? "All mankind," she exclaimed with scorn, "all mankind is no more important to me than the individual termites in a colony. They are creatures of instinct, not of reason or wisdom, for they do not live long enough to acquire those virtues. I have known wise men of learning, compassion, and humanity," he contradicted her. "You make that judgment from the observations of your own short existence," she said. "I have lived long," he said. "But you will not live much longer," she told him. "Your time is nearly done." "You are direct, Eos. As I have already promised, I will speak only the truth to you. The human body is an imperfect vehicle, and life is ephemeral. A man lives too short a span to acquire true wisdom and understanding. By human standards, you are a long liver. 156 years, by my reckoning. To me, that is not much longer than a butterfly lives, or the blooming of a night-flowering cactus, born at dusk and perishing before dawn. The physical vehicle in which your spirit-soul rides will soon fail you." Suddenly, she thrust her right hand from beneath the black silk cloak and made a sign of benediction. If her feet were lovely, her hand was exquisite. His breathing checked, and he felt the hair on his forearms rise as he watched its graceful gestures. "But for you, it need not be so," Eos said softly. "You have not answered my question, Eos. Why me?" "In the short time that you have lived, you have achieved much. If I extend your life eternally, you will become a giant of intellect." "That does not explain all of it. I am old and ugly." "I have already renewed part of your body," she pointed out. He laughed bitterly. "So now I am an ugly old man with a young and beautiful cock." She laughed with him, that thrilling sound. So elegantly phrased. She drew her hand back under the cloak, leaving him bereft. Then she went on. "In the grotto I showed you an image of yourself as a young man. You were beautiful, and you can be again. You can have any beautiful young man you choose. I do not doubt that you have already done so," he challenged. She answered at once, fairly and honestly, 10,000 times or more, but despite their beauty, they were ants. "Will I be any different?" "Oh, yes, Taita, yes." "In what way?" "Your mind," she said. "Carnal passion alone soon palls. A superlative intellect is endlessly alluring. A great mind growing stronger with time in a fine body eternally youthful. These are godlike attributes. Taita, you are the perfect companion and mate I have longed for down the ages." Hour after hour they discoursed. Although he knew that her genius was cold and malevolent, it was still fascinating and seductive. He felt charged with energy, physical and intellectual. Eventually, to his annoyance, he felt the need to absent himself. But before he could voice it, she told him, "There are quarters set aside for you. Pass through that doorway at your right hand and follow the passage to the end." The room to which she had directed him was large and imposing, but he hardly noticed his surroundings, for his mind was alight. He felt no fatigue. In a cubicle he found an ornately carved stool with a latrine bucket set beneath it and relieved himself. In the corner, scented warm water ran from a spout into a basin of rock crystal. As soon as he had washed, he hurried back to the green chamber, hoping that Eos would still be there. The sunlight no longer glowed through the shafts in the roof. Night had fallen. But the rock crystals on the walls glowed with a warm light. Eos sat as he had last seen her, and as he settled himself opposite her, she said, "There is food and drink for you." With that lovely hand she indicated the ivory table beside him. During his absence, silver dishes and a chalice had been set upon it. He felt no hunger, but the fruit and sherbet looked delicious. He ate and drank sparingly, then returned eagerly to their conversation. "You speak easily of eternal life." "The dream of all men from pharaohs to serfs," she agreed. They long for eternal life in an imagined paradise. Even the old people who lived before I was born painted images of that dream on the walls of their caves. Is it possible to fulfil it? Taita asked. I sit before you as living proof that it is. How old are you, Eos?
I was already old when I watched Pharaoh Cheops raise the Great Pyramid at Giza.
How is this possible?
Have you heard of the font? She asked.
It is a myth that has come down to us from antiquity, he replied.
It is no myth, Taita. The font exists.
What is it? Where is it?
It is the blue river of all life, the essential force that drives our universe.
Is it truly a river or a fountain? And why blue? Can you describe it for me?
There are no words, not even in the Tenmas, that adequately describe its might and beauty. When we have become one, I will take you to it. We will bathe side by side in the blue, and you shall come forth in all the splendour of youth.
Where is it? Is it in the sky or in the earth?
It moves from one place to another. As the seas shift and the mountains rise and fall, so the font moves with them.
Where is it now?
Not far from where we sit, said Eos. But be patient. In time I will lead you to it.
She lied. Of course she lied. She was the lie. Even if the font existed, he knew she would lead no other person to it. But still the false promise intrigued him.
I see you doubt me still, Eos said softly. To demonstrate my utmost good faith, I will allow you to take another person with you to the font, to share in its blessing. Someone whom you count dear.
Is there such a person?
Fen.
Instantly he cloaked the thought so that even she could not read it. Eos had set a trap, and he had almost blundered into it.
There is no such person, he answered.
Once, when I overlooked you, you sat beside a pool in the wilderness. I saw a child with you, a pretty child with pale hair.
Ah, yes, he agreed. I forget even her name, for she was one of those you call termites. She was a companion of the moment only.
You do not wish to take her to the font?
There is no reason why I should.
Eos was silent, but he could feel the softest touch on his temples, like that of teasing fairy fingers. He knew that Eos was unconvinced by what he had said, and was trying to enter his head, trying to reach into his mind and steal his thoughts. With a psychic effort, he blocked her entrance, and immediately she withdrew.
You are tired, Taita. You must sleep a while.
I am not tired in the least, he replied. And it was true. He felt vital and fresh.
We have so much to discuss that we are like runners at the start of a long race. We must pace ourselves. After all, we are destined to become companions for all eternity. There is no need to hasten. Time is our plaything, not our adversary.
Eos rose from her couch and, without another word, slipped through a doorway in the back wall that he had not noticed before.